Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Matt Peck, also host of the Bulls Outsider Show on NBC Sports Chicago. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls underscore Peck. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. And follow my co-host, Jordan Malley, at Jordan C. Malley. That text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369, with all of your off-season Bulls-related questions, comments, thoughts, predictions, or anything else NBA-related. If you have thoughts on the recent NCAA rule drop about agents, which we talked about on our Outsiders podcast just the other day with me and Big Dave and John, the All-NBA Decade Team for the 2010s, we touched on that as well. If you have any gripes with people who made the list or didn't make the list, throw those comments towards our inbox. Jordan is out again today. I know I said on my solo earlier this week that we're going through a rocky period of our schedules right now that's making Jordan and I hard to find time to sit down and record these together. We appreciate you bearing with us, and hopefully we will get back on track sometime in the near future. But I wanted to hop on and give you guys some content as we get closer to the weekend. As I'm recording this Thursday morning, the official complete NBA schedule has not yet been dropped, so hopefully we can react to that, recording a show tomorrow, Friday, to get you guys into the weekend. Very excited to see what this Bulls schedule looks like. Excited to see how many nationally televised games they have. Maybe some of the bigger, more exciting matchups. I looked at some of the already announced NBA TV lineups on my solo show from earlier this week, including the opening night games, the Christmas Day games, and some of the revenge games that got leaked earlier this summer. So go back and give that episode a listen if you haven't already. So I figured I would just go over to our mailbox, which is always coming in with new content. Thank you so much to everybody who participates and sends us Bulls comments and questions. Again, that number is 331-979-1369. So let's start with Carmelo Anthony. As I said, Big Dave and John and I recorded an Outsiders podcast yesterday talking about the Melo comments from Stephen A. Smith's First Take show last Friday. I touched on it at the back end of my solo show earlier this week for Locked On Bulls. And it seems like people have some questions in our text line about not back in 2014 Melo, who cares about that? It's the past, but about 2019 Melo, who is still trying to play one more season. And maybe might that season be here in Chicago? Let's not forget that for a while in the 2018-19 season, Carmelo actually was a member of the Bulls when the Bulls and Rockets made that cap-clearing deal. So this comes from the 808. Hey, Matt and Jordan, how do you feel about having Melo as the third player off the bench at small forward for the Bulls? Does having an additional veteran presence like Melo benefit the Bulls players more, or will his presence be a negative on the team because the attention he will attract on his farewell tour, therefore creating pressure from fans to give him more minutes? Personally, I would rather have Vince Carter than Melo, but I feel that Melo has competed at a higher level than Vince. What are your thoughts? Thanks for the pod. And then very similarly from the 309, with all this Melo talk about how he was going to join the Bulls, which is quite frankly BS, under the current circumstances, would you be open to adding Melo as a veteran wing to help with depth? Or do you think he would cost too much or be a distraction? So a couple of texters with essentially the same question. Do you think adding this current version of Melo to the Bulls as a veteran player, some depth off the bench, is a good idea worth exploring? Now, I understand the thought, because if there is a position that is pretty weak right now on this Bulls roster that does not have any depth, when it's scary to think about what happens if, God forbid, Otto Porter gets hurt this season, there is very little trustworthy depth behind him at that spot. And Carmelo Anthony can still come off the bench and get you buckets playing at the wing. Now, Carmelo Anthony has never been an excellent defensive player, and certainly the effort that he gives on that end has decreased significantly as he has reached the twilight years of his career. So you're not adding a two-way player at the wing. You're adding a one-way scorer at the wing, which could still be useful for a Bulls second unit that you sometimes think about who's there and who's going to be doing the scoring in that second unit. Kobe White, maybe looking to get some minutes and lead that second unit's offense. But, you know, if Denzel is healthy, he can be a fairly reliable three-point shooter in that second unit. But it's going to be a better second unit, assuming healthy, than we had last year when this team was just so decimated by injuries, but still not all that much. And Melo could certainly just be a guy who goes and gets you some buckets. As far as the, you know, would it cost too much? I don't know. I don't know if Melo's actually trying to make a lot of money on a one-year deal to do a retirement farewell tour. Would he be a distraction? Maybe. We heard Melo say, when talking about Dwayne Wade's retirement farewell tour season in Miami just now, that he wants that. He wants that experience of Dwayne Wade going around and doing a jersey swap in every city and just getting all these accolades and adoration, which I personally think is bullshit. Come on, how much more do these players' egos need to be stroked? Dwayne Wade, and it's not just my personal vendetta against him, his retirement tour drove me crazy. You know, there's a more subtle way to do that. Dirk Nowitzki, similar, but Dirk Nowitzki did it much more quietly. Tim Duncan, just a couple years ago, played his final season and, you know, did not make it about himself at all. So if Melo just wants a retirement tour for people to kiss his feet, then I would say, no, thank you. Go do that somewhere else. The Bulls need a backup wing. I don't know if Melo being that guy is what you want. And then let's not forget, the reason that Melo, in the last couple of years of his career, has been a distraction, has been a guy who's not happy, is because he has been unwilling to surrender his role as a starter in this league. The very brief experiment with Houston did not work out because they figured out that Melo did not work in their starting five, and Melo thought that he was still at the caliber of being a starter in the NBA, which in my opinion, which in many people's opinion, he is not. So the question of whether or not he'd be a distraction, the retirement farewell tour part is only part of it. He could theoretically be a distraction and a bad mix in the locker room if he does not accept the role of being a bench player. If he is willing to, at this point in his career, as Dwayne Wade did, and credit to Wade in his final season with Miami, say, I'll come off the bench. I'm old. My knees are old. I'm tired. I don't have that much left to give. What I do have left to give, I will happily give in a contributing role off the bench. If Melo is willing to do that, then maybe he finds himself a fit. But personally, having had no previous real connection to Chicago, I don't care that much about Melo and his farewell tour that he wants to have this season. I do not want it to be here in Chicago. I don't think that what he would bring on the court would be worth all the other baggage that you're getting with that. Thanks for the text, guys. All right, next text message from Nathan in the 779. This one is out of left field. I know there's not a lot of stuff to talk about in the offseason right now, so I want to give you guys some ammo. What percent chance would you give Chris Dunn being on Dancing with the Stars in the next 5 years? I'm going 50%. Keep up the good work. Is there some element to Chris Dunn being an avid dancer that I'm unaware of? Or are you alluding to the fact that within the next 5 years, Chris Dunn might be out of the NBA? And that's the joke you're making. I don't know, because obviously a lot of retired professional athletes and even some professional athletes who have yet to retire go on that show that apparently is wildly popular. I know my mom likes that show, and my dad watches it with her to be nice. But I have heard nothing about Chris Dunn being a probable contestant on that show. If the question is, will he be doing that within the next 5 years because he won't be in the NBA within the next 5 years, I would say that's a little insulting to Chris Dunn. I know a lot of us right now are kind of just wanting to see the Chris Dunn saga end because it seems like the Bulls are ready to move on, drafting Coby White, adding Satoransky in free agency. They've got all this depth. They brought back Archie. They brought back Shaq Harrison. It doesn't really seem like keeping Dunn is a part of the plan, at least long term. Short term, it sounds like the market for Chris Dunn didn't dry up. It never existed. There was never a pool to begin with. So the Bulls might be forced to keep Dunn on this roster and see where he stacks up in the competition for minutes in the backcourt. I think if that does happen and he is on this roster come the start of training camp in about a month, then, or I guess over a month still, then you're talking about, does Chris Dunn become this team's primary backup ahead of Coby White, ahead of Archie Diacono? It's certainly possible, just because it seems like the Bulls tried to dangle Chris Dunn. They made him available. They shopped him around earlier this offseason, and they came up with squat. So I think Chris Dunn's Bulls tenure is nearing an end, whether or not that's before training camp or at the deadline next February. Is his NBA career nearing an end? I think that he is useful enough as an above-average defensive player who could still theoretically put in the work, add a three-point shot to his game if, you know, he knows that that's something he should be working on, insert joke here, and find himself a role as a journeyman backup guard. I think he can be good enough to do that in the NBA. As for Dancing with the Stars, that is out of my wheelhouse. Never watched a single episode. All right, our next mailbag item comes to us from Steve in Gippsland, Australia. Shout out to all of our fans over in Australia and our guy Mark Kay, who does great work with Bulls HQ, another part of the Bulls podcast family. So Steve in Australia is wondering about Patty Mills. Hey guys, love the show, listen every day. Well, I'm working down here in my garden. All right, we got a hoops fan and a green thumber. I feel like there's not a whole lot of crossover there. I do not know jack about gardening. Anyway, so here's his question about Patty Mills. I love Patty Mills being an Australian basketball guy. Even though he's on a crazy contract at the moment, any chance we pick him up as a cheap backup in 2021 when his contract expires? I'd love to watch my Bulls with Patty Mills. Reality, probably not going to happen. So thanks for checking in, Steve. Jordan and I feel like have gotten a question about Patty Mills before when we talk about the fact that this Bulls team has just been so destitute at the point guard spot over the last few years in the wake of the decline of Derrick Rose. Now, as Steve mentioned, Mills is under contract for two more seasons. He signed a four-year, $48 million deal with the Spurs, and he is making 12.4 this upcoming season and then on the books for the 2021 season for another 13.2. Unrestricted free agency hits for Mills in the summer of 2021 when the Bulls will be a team that has significant cap space clearing. That is the summer when Otto's money comes off the books, when Felicio's money comes off the books, and the Bulls' current solution, or part of the solution at point guard, one of their new additions this summer, Thomas Satoransky, has a partially guaranteed third year that would be that 2021-22 season. So, if the Spurs are looking at, you know, they also, the Spurs have two young up-and-coming guards that are kind of both combo guards, DeJounte Murray and Derek White. Really nice pair of young talent in the backcourt there. Maybe they finally see in 2021 that at age 33, they're ready to let Patty Mills go. Or if Pop is still around in 2021, and why wouldn't he be? The guy's an ageless wonder. He says, Patty Mills might be getting old, but he still does all the things that we need him to do. And he's one of the best role players that exists in the NBA, and he can still be that quality of a role player for a couple more seasons into his mid-30s. So I would say when Patty Mills hits free agency in 2021, it is certainly not a guarantee that the Spurs let him go and that the Spurs will try to keep him around. And it's also very possible that Patty Mills says, San Antonio is the only place I want to be. You know, they're going through a shift right now. Some people are saying that, you know, this is the year when the Spurs finally fall off and don't make the playoffs in a very competitive Western Conference. I still am not counting them out. You got Pop running your team. You got some nice young talent on that team. I can never count out Pop Spurs. If the Spurs do let Patty Mills flirt around in unrestricted free agency, and if the Bulls have gone through two seasons of Satoransky and decide they do want to keep him on for that third year, but they want to add more depth, at that point, you know, Coby White will still be on his rookie deal. And at that point, Archie might be gone, Shaq Harrison might be gone, Chris Dunn will almost certainly be gone. Adding veteran, you know, depth to your backcourt in the name of Patty Mills, not a terrible idea. It's actually a pretty great idea. If the Bulls could get him on an affordable deal, I would say, hell yeah, go do it. The issue that might present itself is that in the summer of 2021, which is the next big free agent class after the one we just saw here in 2019, you know, the 2020 free agent class is pretty shallow. If a bunch of teams clear cap space for 2021, Bulls included, and go out and try to get those big name top tier free agents and miss, the teams that have the cap space to spend and are using it on consolation prize kind of players, those players tend to be overpaid because so many teams have money to spend. That's what we saw in the summer of 2016. To a certain degree, you saw it again happen this summer. With mid-tier players getting not max money, but certainly more money than they probably should get. Patty Mills, to me, is a perfect candidate for that kind of contract in 2 years. 33, still has a couple of good years left to offer. A great player, a well-respected player, and a second-tier player who several teams might be vying for his services as a quality veteran backcourt depth piece to their roster and give him a big payday. So the Bulls might be competing with several teams for his services, which Steve said might result in an overpay. We'll see. I love Patty Mills. I think he's a great player. I think he doesn't get enough credit in this league. And of course, all of our Aussie Bulls fans would love to see that happen. Obviously, you know, I don't think he's going anywhere in the next 2 years. I think the Spurs are keeping him. Unless Patty makes it clear to them in his final season that, hey, I'm ready to move on and go somewhere else, then maybe they might look to trade him to get something for him. But I think that Patty Mills and the Spurs are a great fit, and I'd be surprised to see him be, you know, quick and desperate to dart somewhere else when he hits free agency in a couple of years. Thanks for the question. This next one comes to us from the 847. Hey guys, first time texting in. Welcome to the Thunderdome. What do you guys think about shortening the season to 65 games and having a mid-season tournament, possibly around All-Star Weekend? Hopefully that would keep the league and the TV networks happy, as well as creating interest around younger up-and-coming teams. It definitely makes it tougher to compare players against other players throughout history. Love the show. Go Bulls. Thanks for texting in. Always enjoy hearing from people hitting up that text and voicemail line for the first time. I know it can be scary texting an unknown number, but I swear we're nice people. Unless you suggest something stupid and then you're going to get reamed out. But we'll be nice to you because it's your first time texting in. So I talked about this earlier this week on my other solo show when I was just kind of talking about the NBA schedule and the NBA calendar year and some of the things around that because we have the schedule getting dropped later today. I know that I think the players would be in favor of reducing the number of games. The league's already taken some measures, you know, no more four games and five nights, reducing the number of back-to-backs, all that stuff. I mean, to me, taking... So if you go from 82 to 65, quick math, you're taking 17 games off of the calendar, off of the NBA season. Those are 17 games that I want. I'm sorry. Like, these are professional athletes that get paid very handsomely, and I don't think 82 games spanning October to April is too much to ask. And it's becoming more and more acceptable and accepted for players to rest throughout the throughout the season. Take games off, load management, you know, this, that. We see a lot of it. Kawhi did it with the Spurs this past season, and it helped get him to a title. Obviously, fans don't want to see stars sit. That's what I was touching on earlier this week. As for the midseason tournament to kind of make up for the reduction of the number of regular season games, I don't really see the appeal. Like, what is a winning a midseason tournament do? You're not winning the title. You're winning a midseason tournament that means what? Is there a reward of some kind for winning that midseason tournament other than a different trophy or a midseason champion banner that you can put in the rafters of your stadium? Does winning a midseason tournament do something for you for the real playoffs when they start a couple months later in April? And if so, how does that work out? Is it affecting seeding? Is it affecting whether or not you have home court compared to just your regular season record? There are a lot of different ways you could make, you know, that you could incentivize making a midseason tournament worth competing in and worth winning. I just don't really know realistically what those rewards would be. And then if you say you want to put it somewhere around All-Star Weekend, are you replacing All-Star Weekend with a midseason tournament? Would players want that? I feel like most players enjoy the All-Star break. And players that are All-Stars and voted to, you know, both conferences' All-Star teams feel that as a sense of pride. It's an accomplishment that they can put on their career achievement list. And they go and enjoy All-Star Weekend wherever All-Star Weekend is. They get to hang out with their friends on other teams. They get to have fun. And those who aren't at All-Star Weekend get to get the hell out of Dodge for a while and go sip on a beach and drink rum and forget for a brief moment that they got to be back in the gym working their butts off, you know, in 5 or 6 days. And I think NBA players deserve that. So if you're talking about making a midseason tournament and that maybe being something that happens instead of All-Star Weekend or as All-Star Weekend, then you're asking every team and every team's complete roster to be practicing and playing games in a stretch of the calendar where they usually are expecting to get close to a full week off. Whether at the All-Star game, sitting, you know, taking in the dunk contest and, you know, going back and forth in a, you know, half-paced game where no one plays defense and the score is 200 to 199, you're not really exerting yourself either way. Would players want a midseason tournament? Would players accept playing in a midseason tournament if there were incentives for the real tournament at the back end of the real season? If that were on the table, would they say, okay, well, then we're good to play? Or would they rather just say, you know what, just keep it at 82 games? We'll play the 82. Don't get your panties in a twist when we decide to take the occasional night off and just let All-Star break be All-Star break. I feel like more players might feel that they would prefer the latter, which is just, you know, don't add another midseason tournament that requires all 30 teams to have their full roster somewhere practicing and playing. Give us our All-Star break. That's just my guess, though. Anyway, thanks for the question. All right, let's take one more text and then we will get out of here. This one comes to us from the 219. Do the Bulls have a higher ceiling with adding Satoransky and drafting Kobe White? or adding Satoransky and drafting Cam Reddish? Let me know what you think. I think Reddish all day. Interesting. So, you know, the drafts came and went a while ago. I feel like for the most part, we've hit like a downswing on analyzing teams and their draft picks because it's been a while. We saw some of the rookie class play in summer league last month, but we didn't really see the biggest stars play in summer league. Not many of the top 10, but Coby White did play, and Coby White was a mixed bag of results. Now, Cam Reddish is an interesting one, especially because the Bulls appear to be a team that is weak in depth when you're talking about the combo two guard three spot, which is where Reddish projects to play. People see Reddish as a high ceiling guy, but also a potential bust low floor guy. In my opinion, did the Bulls reach by taking Coby White at 7? Yes. Yes, I think they did. And I think that they were very aware of their need at point guard, and they let that not dictate their decision, but certainly have a greater impact than perhaps in recent years when the Garpax party line has always been best player available regardless of need. I absolutely think Coby White is an example of the team swaying closer to drafting for need as opposed to best available. But the thing to me is, and it's something that we heard Paxson say, if we don't see a huge difference in best available versus this player addresses a need and it's not a big gap as far as the talent on our draft board, then we might let that sway our decision. We essentially heard Paxson say that when talking leading up to the draft. And so I think because this was such a weak draft class, they didn't see reaching on Coby White as an egregious reach because they were not so high on any of the other talent on the board at 7 that played a different position. And that includes Cam Reddish. Now, that is how the Bulls felt in their scouting department, and they decided, we really like Coby White. We're going to take Coby White. It's going to help address our issue at the point guard spot. And yes, he's young. He's a project. We're going to bring him along slowly, but we really believe in his talents and his ceiling, and we also really like this kid. He's a hard worker. He's got a great story, you know, as far as his background, his work ethic, you know, his family life and what family means to him. All of those kind of things you hear the Bulls talk about when you talk about the kind of character, high character guys that they go after when they're drafting. Coby White fits that mold. Not to say that Cam Reddish doesn't, but we did hear certain questions and concerns about Cam Reddish and his work ethic coming into the draft. Not just looking on the tape and seeing that Cam Reddish just seemed like a guy who took a lot of plays off when he was playing in college and just seemed lost, didn't seem to put forth full effort, especially on the defensive end. And maybe people think people who criticized Reddish for that were reading too much into it. And it's possible. But for every way that you can say that Coby White was a reach, for every way that you could say Coby White had some red flags as far as just like, maybe he's a little turnover prone. You know, he's not a great distributor yet. He's an okay three-point shooter, but he's not a great three-point shooter. All these various holes in Coby White's game that people were poking at, those who weren't happy with the draft pick among the fan base, you could bring up just as many, if not more, holes and concerns in Cam Reddish's game. I don't think it is clear-cut that Cam Reddish has a higher ceiling than Coby White. I think they both fall in the category of players who do have potential and have high ceilings, but neither has a perennial all-star caliber kind of ceiling. I think they can both be good NBA players. I don't think either will turn out to be a great NBA player. So to me, if you're upset, especially, you know, as this texter asks, well, if you added Satoransky in free agency, then why did you draft Coby White? We could have addressed our other position of need and added Cam Reddish as some depth at the wing. I understand that, and, you know, the question, well, are the Bulls as a whole, is the roster better if you have Satoransky and Reddish or if you have Satoransky and White? To me, it's not a big difference, and it's really hard to tell right now. we'll see what Cam Reddish ends up doing and what kind of minutes he gets in Atlanta. Because remember, like, the Hawks took DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish with all of those picks they had early in the 2019 draft. And that's a fun, exciting young team over in Atlanta. And I think they're going to be one of the young teams that is fighting the Bulls as well as Orlando and Detroit for the 7th and 8th seeds this upcoming season. But am I ready to say right now in early August that the Bulls goofed by taking Coby White instead of Cam Reddish? Absolutely not. We got to wait and see what these players look like on an NBA court. If you think that Reddish is better or has a higher ceiling, or you wanted the Bulls to take Reddish ahead of Coby White, you are entitled to that opinion. I would say right now it is far too early to tell. That's going to do it for this edition of Locked on Bulls. Thank you to everyone who texted in with some comments and questions through the offseason. It gets harder and harder to find things to talk about, but we do our best to be here for you because we know that this is the craziest, the best, the most passionate fan base in the NBA, and we want to be here for you throughout the offseason when several other podcasts start to, you know, take more frequent breaks and become more infrequent with their podcast. We know that we have fallen off of our 5 days a week mantra over the last couple of weeks. Our summer schedules have been pretty complicated, and it's made things harder for Jordan and myself to sit down and record together. But when I can, if Jordan is busy or vice versa, try to hop on and give you guys at least a shorter solo show just to give you guys some content, because we love y'all and we love being here for you to talk Bulls regularly. We do have a bunch of new voicemails in our voicemail box, so hopefully either maybe tomorrow or early next week when Jordan and I can get down together, we can go over some of those voicemails together and get to those after going through some of these text messages today. Once again, that text and voicemail line is 331-979-1369. For Jordan Malley, Matt Peck saying thanks so much for listening to Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. I'm at Bulls _ Peck. He's at Jordan C. Malley. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. We will talk to you soon. Peace.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Follow Locked On Bulls on social media, on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck, and on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.